This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Ringgit and Sense on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin, and you're listening to Ringgit and Sense, the show that's all about personal finance. With me is Tan Chung Han.
Good morning.
Yeah, and today, Han, we're going to be highlighting four memorable conversations that we had this year about managing our personal finances. Now, we're going to start with a look at a show we did on financial resolutions. And there was some valuable advice that's still applicable today, especially as we approach the new year.
Yeah, so back in January, Julian Ng spoke to Iris Lee from financial website iMoney, and she had some brilliant ideas if you're thinking of making some financial resolutions for 2018.
Now, you suggested something that is quite interesting and intriguing, in my opinion, on your website, which is to establish a no-spend weekend once a month. First of all, what is this? And second of all, it sounds impossible. How do you have a no-spend day, let alone a no-spend weekend?
It's actually quite easy. It's technically, it's not really completely no-spend because a lot of things we have already bought like on subscription basis, yeah. So it's sort of like considered. So for example, you can just stay at home, but of course you need necessities like food and all that. So you cook at home, you watch your maybe Netflix or iFlix subscription at home, and all these are you're already paying for it.
Right.
But you don't go out for a movie, you don't go out to the mall, because every time you step into the mall, you say I'm just going to window shop, but you're actually paying petrol, paying parking, paying toll, and you know you're bound to buy something.
Yeah, even if it's a drink. You spend a couple hours in the mall, you're bound to spend something.
So make a weekend like a hibernation weekend. Stay at home. And it's also good for your, for people around you, for your family to spend some time outside where there's so much noise.
And no spend weekend.
Is there a more zen aspect to this? Because what do you do when you stay at home? Do you find that you're in a position to replace the kind of very short-lived kick that you get from going to the malls?
Actually, for me, it's sort of like a financial detoxing. So I get away from all these temptations, and I just focus on the very basic needs of a human being: food, minimal entertainment.
Minimal entertainment,
yes.
Really?
For example, watch some TV or just surf the net, or
read a book.
Yes, read a book. Something very simple and very basic, so I don't have to go out and constantly have to entertain myself with something.
And did you find that the savings were substantial when you did that?
It's sort of not really. If you just do like one weekend a month, it's not really.
So one weekend a month?
It's not really. It's sort of getting. It's more a habit thing. If you get into the habit, and then over the longer term, you will know when not to spend, what not to spend, and it's possible not to do that.
Right.
So it's sort of the mindset.
Okay, that's interesting. I might try that.
Financial detoxing on a no-spend
weekend. I don't know if I can take it longer than a weekend.
The next tip I was going to give is start with one weekend and maybe, prolong. Prolong it.
Maybe a no-spend week.
Yes.
The entire week.
That's why I start with a weekend.
But that one is dangerous because then I can come to work and say, Jules, buy me lunch.
Well, that's one way to do it. Then I'll reply, I'm on a no-spend week too.
Okay, so that was Julian and Melissa speaking to Iris. Any takeaways? Is this something you might adopt, Han?
No, not really. I'm kind of going for a more sustainable approach, right, whereby you live well below your means, right, keep your debt super manageable, and that way you've got a lot more comfort and got more headroom to play with, as opposed to force binging this non-spend weekend or this financial detox. I think a more appropriate term would be, say, a consumerism detox. Stop consuming so much, but consume the minimal just to survive.
I don't know if this is about these financial consultants. They always seem to be wet blankets. They're always suggesting you don't have much pleasure. I'm not sure what life would be without those pleasures.
Yeah, what's a weekend that is no-spend weekend?
Well, okay, we'll move away from the no-spend weekend to another resolution from that same interview with Julian and Melissa. This is Iris.
When I look at the article on your website, you have the first point saying resolve to learn something new. What is behind this tip for 2017?
Of course, it's something new related to finance. We have said it a few times that saving alone won't make you rich. So you can save 500 ringgit every month into your bank account, it won't make you rich because inflation will slowly erode your savings. So in order for you to reach your financial goals, so let's say you want to save up to 100,000 but in 3 years' time, so you should consider things like investing your savings. So that will actually help you protect your savings from inflation and also earn more at the end of it. So how do you do that? So a lot of people say they don't know how to, you know, invest in stocks, invest in ETF and all that. So make it a point this year to learn something new, read about it, ask people. There are a lot of financial advisors, of course, qualified financial advisors. Yeah, so talk to them, ask their opinion and learn how to, you know, invest in something like ETF to make your money work harder for you.
Okay, that was Iris Lee from the financial website iMoney. Next, we move to an interview, Han, you did and together with Joyce Goh, and you spoke to Lim Fing Fing. She's director of PwC International Assignment Services to look at personal tax planning.
Yeah, and we started with the basics, okay? So I asked her which income is taxable and which is non-taxable.
I think for the benefit of everyone, you need to understand that Malaysia administers a territorial tax system, okay? That means the Malaysian tax authorities is only looking into your income that's earned in Malaysia, all right? Your Malaysian earnings. So if you have any foreign source income or income earned overseas, this is not taxable in Malaysia, even if you bring those monies into Malaysia, all right? So once you've established that, now you as a taxpayer, you need to understand where your sources of income in Malaysia is coming from, all right? So you would have income that's coming from two broad categories. One of them is active income. Basically, that's income earned from employment or business, which are generally subject to tax, okay? Although there are certain exemptions accorded to certain types of employment income, depending on whether you meet those conditions for exemptions. Examples would include pensions, retirement gratuities, termination payments. So these are some of the exempt remuneration items. And then, of course, you have your passive source of income. Okay. This would be things like your interest income that you earn from bank deposits, which are already exempt from tax. All right. Dividend incomes from shares that you hold from in listed companies. And also rental income that you derive from renting out your property, now that's taxable. And some of you may have royalties income from patent or copyrights. And this is actually taxable if it exceeds certain exemption limits.
We also asked Fing Fing what you can do to reduce taxable income.
If you look at you need to look at your own circumstances, okay, basically before you determine what reliefs you're eligible to claim, all right? So these reliefs can be broadly categorized into three different categories. You have your status and family type reliefs, which is your basic reliefs, you know, your spouse relief, your child relief, your other dependent reliefs like parent reliefs. And then on top of that, the government introduced a new reliefs as well for 2017 to encourage women to stay in the workforce. So for 2017, if you're a working mother who's still breastfeeding a child, right, you get to claim a breastfeeding equipment relief up to 1,000 ringgit. And this can be claimed every 2 years. All right. And apart from that, I'm sure you have working mothers who send their children to childcare centres and nurseries. So if you do that, if you have a child aged 6 years and below, you can also claim 1,000 ringgit relief. Okay.
On the school fees?
On the nursery fees.
We can claim that.
That's right.
Okay, that was Lim Ping Ping, director at PwC International Assignment Services. We'll be back with more from the year 2017. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
Ringgit and Cents on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Good morning, you're listening to Ringgit and Cents, a show that's all about personal finance. I'm Sharad Kutin, with me, Tan Chung Han.
Good morning.
Good morning. We continue our conversations, or look back rather, on the conversations that we've had on the question of personal finance in 2017. Now, back in June, Julian Ng spoke to Joyce Chua, she's a licensed financial planner and CEO of Success Concepts, about financial scams.
Why do you think people keep falling into these kind of traps?
We're just humans.
We are, right?
Yeah, we're just humans.
And we don't learn.
And social media does not help at all.
we are very attracted to fast, quick gains. And it helps very much when the advertisement of the particular scam says it's guaranteed. That's the magic word.
So, you know, how do you approach this from a principle-based financial planning viewpoint? Should people consider this kind of thing to help them with the long-term financial planning because the returns are attractive? Because otherwise, if you don't consider it, there's this feeling of losing out, right? The fear of losing out, right?
Absolutely, the Kiasu syndrome. It's all about asset allocation. I mean, at the end of the day, plain vanilla investments are the cornerstone to your portfolio. And that determines and that guarantees, basically the word guarantees, your financial future.
When you say vanilla, what do you mean?
Well, plain vanilla would mean equities, mm-hmm. Bonds, you know, fixed income, properties.
And equities are a diversified portfolio instead of stock picking?
Absolutely. And yeah, that's right. Because okay. Stock picking and trading and punting would sometimes fall into that greed part. You know, when you are just flipping stocks, if you don't have time and the skill or you don't have the IT tool to be able to manage your stocks on a daily basis, then that can be also a source of a greed return.
So that was Joyce Chua speaking to Julie Ng. She, of course, is a licensed financial planner and CEO with Success Concepts. Mm.
And then I guess going back to what Joyce just mentioned there, whereby, you know, being able to identify, you know, this greed element that are perhaps inherent in some of us or perhaps all of us, right? And then being able to manage that and then plan your personal finances accordingly, right? So even when it comes to, say, investing in stocks, there is a difference between investing and actively trading, you know, stock picking versus, say, you know, holding on to a stock because of the company's fundamentals, etc.
Isn't it captured in this idea of risk appetite? You know, how far you go, how safe you be. I mean, you know, and because it's about how perhaps you, what kind of returns you want, and maybe it's also about a personality thing. Some people prefer something slow and steady in long term, and others like the excitement, the adrenaline that comes from punting and perhaps making, you know, some money they can boast about. Yeah. You can't really boast about ETFs.
Yeah.
You know, well, by that time, everybody's moved away from the party, right?
Yeah. Well, I think there is, okay, fine, there is a spectrum when it comes to the your risk appetite, right? But I think that risk appetite has to be, confined or within the confines of what's, considered, healthy investments, as opposed to, like we mentioned earlier, right, you hear of these scams of people handing you a box of leeches for you to
That's what
them.
We talked about this
right.
morning.
Right. You know, so, you know, when you have those kind of investments, sure, you can say that those people who buy into those scams have a huge amount of risk appetite, but is that, you know, healthy? Then obviously not, right? It tips the scales into the other extreme, right? So I think it's recognizing that there is this gamut of risk appetites, but it has to operate within a certain confines.
Okay. Okay, so all of you who've missed the voice of Julian Ng, you're going to get a lot of it this morning. Mm-hmm. Okay, so we, in fact, get a lot of calls and questions about money matters and also how it impacts relationships. So this is Joyce Chua again speaking to Julian.
We have a caller. Jenny is on the line. Jenny, go ahead.
Hi, Joyce and Julian. My boyfriend and I are thinking of getting married, but I suspect that he's heavily in debt. I think he's supporting his parents with his own income and two younger siblings, and he has like loans for his house and his car. So just want to know whether it's wise to marry him or like the things that I need to make sure is in place before that happens.
Thank you very much, Jenny, for your question. And we hope that things would work out for both of you. And Joyce, this is really right up your alley because this is a relationship question.
Exactly.
It's also a financial question
exactly.
about a potential life partner being potentially deep in debt.
That's right.
And then the question is very interesting. Should she marry him?
Yeah. What do I do before I say I do? That sort of thing, right? The thing is that it's good to find out the financial background of your would-be spouse. And whether to marry him or not, I wouldn't say yes or no to you. But at the end of the day, you need to sit down with him before you get married and be clear about your finances. Who is going to take care of which part of your personal financial life? Now, with regards to his debt, it's very, very important because in Malaysia, you don't have a prenup. And a prenup is not is not something acceptable. It's something that you can actually present in court later on. But it is good to have an offline prenup with him. I mean, at least have something that you can document and say, okay, before we start this journey together, let's just look at what do you have. What do a net worth statement with each other. Show each, you know, before you get married, you have this thing called personality test to see whether you are you're suitable for each other. Instead of a personality test, do a financial personality test. There are financial personality tests that I conduct. I do, and at the same time, the hard data about your own net worth, about your own cash flow. Be as transparent as possible, and then set an offline prenup in that sense. What sort of expenses you will take care of, and by when, if you have debt, to clear this, and that I will not be responsible for your debt.
Okay, that was Joyce Chua, licensed financial planner and CEO of Success Concepts, speaking to Julian Ng.
Yeah, very, very important, you know, noting the intertwining nature between money and relationships.
But now, was it realistic, though? I mean, Joyce is very clear. It's a very rational approach, but I don't know if relationships are built and structured around this kind of reasoning. Because as soon as you say, I'm very worried about your debt situation. It's like, are you marrying me? I mean, are you concerned just about the money? I mean, there are all kinds of trust issues that come in. Don't you trust me, to deal with these issues? I mean, that's the stuff of a relationship. You know, you're not talking to a bank manager, right?
Sure. I mean, but at the same time, it's also looking beyond those rose-tinted glasses and being able to assess the person, for his or her financial management capabilities. I'm going to cite a Citibank survey right now. 57% of divorced couples cite money problems. Okay, even CNBC has got an article, The Independent has got an article in the last couple of years. I mean, we hear this time and time again, right? Money is one of the leading causes for divorce. So do you want to set yourself up for failure just so that you can trust your partner?
Okay, you go into your partner and say you're heavily in debt, and your partner says to you, well, you remember all those wonderful dinners I bought you when you didn't pay a cent and I picked up the tab? I mean, that added to my debt. So do you want to if I was a skinflint and I was tight-fisted and didn't spend any money on you, would we even be at this point where we're going to get married, right? Yeah. So, I mean, there are all kinds of pushbacks on this demand for fiscal discipline from your life partner.
But let's not be naive here, okay? Like, you size up your partner on so many fronts, and as well, be it their genes or be it their financial abilities, or be their perhaps inclinations towards being good parents, right? So you are constantly sizing them up.
Okay, I want to ask you.
Don't do this right now.
I want to ask you this. You had to choose between somebody who is tight-fisted and somebody who is generous with their money. Who would you go for?
False dilemma. No, I'm not going to fall
for
that one.
What do you mean?
No, it's not like that, because I would go for somebody who's prudent with her finances.
Okay, but that's not an option. People come one way or the other. I mean, realistic, when we talk about personal finances, we're talking about human beings and their attitudes. I mean, what would you prefer? Somebody you're going to go through life with who's always going to be counting, the dollars and cents, and every holiday is about this, and don't want to take any risks, and they're from Penang, and they bring an egg to the kuay teow seller. Or would you like somebody who lives life to the full?
No.
And wants to share that experience with you.
My bias would be on the tight-fisted one, because there's less of a risk of financial downfall. I mean, yeah, fine, go ahead, go be generous, and then lead yourself down to financial ruin. Then would you rather have that?
No, I wouldn't.
But
I would also keep separate bank accounts. I would be very
curious. Who's the one with trust issues right now?
I do have problems with trust issues. In fact, I think the person who's financially prudent and prudent emotionally might not even think about marriage. Being single is an option. Okay. That's all we have for you today on Ring & Sense. A look back on 2017. We still have one more Ring & Sense show, and that's coming up next week. So stay tuned for that. We're coming up to the top of the hour. And then we'll have the news, and Enterprise will be taking over. Thank you for staying with The Morning Run. I'm Shaun Kutin, with me, Tan Chung Han, BFM 89.9, The Business Station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, The Business Station.